All right, now I'm going to tell you a story, Justin, about something that happened to me this week that I ran by my girlfriend to let her know, to ask if this was okay to talk about. It's a little, I'm not trying to be like, oh, it's so raunchy, but it's a little.
A little raunch.
This is an adult story, okay? And just a very good example of who I am and who I always have been. So last week, at about give or take 12:03 a.m. During the week, I had to run out to CVS to buy some, if I say like maybe emergency oral contraceptives. Okay. Is that?
Yeah, sure.
Which is always like, you know,
cheap,
like cheap. And, you know, you're always like in your element.
Yeah.
Cause I'm nice, a gentleman, and I go in and take care of all of that. But so I was in the store for a long time because I couldn't figure out that it was behind the counter and not on the shelf. So I go up, figure that out, go to pay for it, which the woman behind the counter was extremely nice, not weird about it at all, which I find that it, like, as long as if you're an adult about it and not weird about it, they're not going to be weird about it with you. Most of the time. And so I go to pay, and my card the card reader isn't reading my card. So she's like, can you try swiping it? And I was like, yeah, I can swipe it. So I swipe the card. She goes, it didn't go through. And I'm looking at the reader. I'm like, what is wrong? And then I look in my hand, and I'm trying to pay for this with a Cheesecake Factory gift card. And no. She can see it.
Yeah, she let it happen, though.
It was the sort of thing where I could tell that she was sort of trying to say, like, sir, you know what it's I mean? Not, like,
yeah, she's trying to be polite. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I laughed out loud at and, apologized and paid for it. But it's one of those moments where it's just like, yeah, that seems right for me. Like that seems correct. I mean,
there's a lot of ways we go with this, but like one of the things is that I'm pretty sure that person, that cashier went home. And
I altered this woman's life forever.
Yeah,
she now has a story to tell every single person who asks about this.
Yeah,
sort of
that like that became the story. Do you know that you can? Where did you get this again? You said CVS or Walgreens?
I guess it was a Walgreens. Yes.
Okay. So like you can like get it. They can like pull it for you and put it in a little baggie, so you never have to talk to a person.
Oh. Perhaps. That's good to know.
Yeah, but it's also worse, like, you had to go behind the counter, right? So you had to get someone to get it for you, right?
Yeah.
That's also one of those things. It's like, yeah, I'm going to get a 5-hour energy.
Well, I was thinking about what else I should
Listerine.
Buy. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah. No, she was like, do you have a brand preference? And I was like, oh, house brand. So it was like a 6. Help me save.
Well, I also wanted,
like, without missing a beat, I was like, oh yeah,
it's cheap, give me well. Yeah. I also wanted to check too to make sure that you went to like a CVS or Walgreens and not like a dollar store, because while
they sell those at the dollar store,
it's like a stick and a coin.
Oh, come
you just,
on
you, you,
oh,
yeah,
gross.
You just
Justin,
flip the coin.
Gross. Justin, gross, horrific fucking shit right there. I want to
clarify that joke. I totally meant it as I was confusing a pregnancy test with that.
Oh, no.
And now I understand why what I said was a problem.
Yes, yeah, fucking horrific. Fucking horrific. Apologize.
I'm sorry. I meant a pregnancy test. Like, am I pregnant? Coin flip. That's what I meant. Like, you pee on a stick and flip a coin.
I was curious what the coin was for. I was more preoccupied with the other thing. I was like, well, you want to go to the 24-hour donut store? Had a donut. It was a pretty good night, all things considered.
Could have been worse. Could have been worse.
Could have been worse. It's Hitbox! Welcome back to Hitbox, a podcast. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Thanks for going there with me, Justin.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And seeing the humor in it and understanding the joy.
No, I mean, yeah, as being a responsible person who can't afford children, I think it's also important to note that you can't afford the oral contraception as well, because that stuff is expensive.
Well, I can't afford the name brand, but the
house Walgreens you're in,
it's perfect.
You're in.
Yes, yes.
Are you okay?
No. Yes, I am. No, I'm not going to say any of that. I thought about it.
Self-censoring.
It's a recorded conversation.
Yeah.
I had a friend once say to me, he came to see my band play. And when we got done, he was like, dude, you're just always yourself, huh? Yep. It's exactly this Cheesecake gift card thing. Is like, yep. That's just what happens to me. But Justin, can I give you a quick preview of what's coming up in the news?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here are three of our biggest headlines for today. Spider-Man 2 DLC plans seem to have been changed, or perhaps were never what we thought they were in the first place. Bloober Team is done making, quote, shitty games. A wonderful aspiration. Congratulations, Bloober. And Remedy shows off its next game. We're going to talk about those three headlines and more. But before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon if they're feeling monetarily generous. On patreon.com/hitboxpod, you can become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer, like Jane Hole, like GKS, like Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get a 30-minute Did you know you have 30 minutes? 30 minutes? That's a TikTok sound that Elena keeps saying at me. What was I saying? Every single week, they get a 30-minute bonus episode. Today, we're talking about... what were we talking about today, Justin?
We're talking about the rest of the year and the games we're going to play.
Oh, yeah.
Our gaming priorities of 2024.
Because you know what's wild? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are 10 weeks until the end of the year. That's crazy.
No, you're kidding, right?
No.
That's when you put it like that, life goes by so fast.
It does. It does. It was mentioned in a meeting, I guess, 2 weeks ago at this point, where someone was like, well, there's only 12 weeks left in the year. And I was like, what's that? What did you say to me?
And I bet that meeting felt like it was yesterday, I'm sure.
It did.
And then 2 weeks...
Well put. But yeah, so we're having that conversation there. So if you're interested in that, patreon.com/hitboxpod. If not, that's fine. You can support us on Twitter by following us at hitboxpod. Should I make a blue sky, Justin? I made one for myself, but it's kind of like for networking conversations because I work online. You know what I mean? Yes, please.
What's a blue sky?
Oh, it's like a Twitter alternative that everyone like. That's the Twitter alternative that a lot of people are using. But I'm trying to spend like less time on social media, not more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like it's just like at a certain point, it's like the streaming services. There's too many social medias you need. There's too many streaming services you need. At a certain point, just stop using social media. It's the number one problem affecting the future of the generations.
I'll say this, like way less Nazis on Blue Sky than on Twitter.
Oh,
my goodness. The vibes over there are way better.
Way more positive.
Blue Sky on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, I'm not going to do that, I think. Twitter.com/hitboxpod. At hitboxpod, rather. Want to go to the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
Three games in the Metacritic Roundup. Justin, I'm kind of excited to talk about all of these. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with your favorite blue friend.
Oh, shit. Sonic X Shadows Generations. Reviews dropped for this morning. Only reviewed on the PlayStation 5, where it scored an 80. Pretty solid here. It is unscored on the PS4, the Xbox Series X, the Xbox One, the personal computer, and the Nintendo Switch. That is where it is going to be all over. But yeah, an 80 is, I mean, that's high for a Sonic game, I feel like, right? What do you think about all this?
Yeah, so is this like an extension to Sonic Generations, but with Shadow in it?
Yeah, so this is like a remaster of Sonic Generations, but then it also adds additional shadow. It's like a shadow generate. It's like a mid sequel, kind of like a 1.5.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Where it's like, it's the same game, but then also has a whole other sort of shadow leg to it.
Well, speaking of shadow legs, I am watching the like trailer cartoon that they're showing, with it. And, Maria just kind of like tenderly is grabbing him and does a little bit of like a caress of his mouth.
I'm seeing the eye, the eyes sort of like shaking around, 'cause she looks like she's going to cry.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is again creating the weird vibe of what is Sonic's relationship? What are these hedgehogs' relationships with the humans?
It's always so weird whenever you see them next to a human.
Yeah.
It's so weird because it just makes you like, it just makes you wonder, like, what is, like, what's your eye made out of?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's so gross to look at.
I'm glad out of all the body parts, you focused on the eye.
Yeah, man. Like, what's up with these guys? I will say, like, this looks interesting to me as a Sonic fan, as a Shadow fan. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, an 80 is pretty good. I was kind of not going to try this because of Sonic's sort of whole thing. But I was watching the IGN review of it, and the reviewer, I'm forgetting who it was. Let's see here. I've got it right here. Jada Griffin was saying that, like, this is probably their favorite Sonic game in a long while.
Ever?
Which
in a long while.
Probably not ever. Yeah. Let's see. They said they said something about, like, it has become one of my favorite Sonic games I've ever played. So, yeah, so it's getting up there, I guess. Which, to be honest with you, like, I think that as an adult, the bar gets a little bit lower when actually, like, looking at these games. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But, I mean, to have, like, a good 3D Sonic game, right? Like, it is 3D, right?
3D, 2D. So it's both.
Okay. So to have something like that, bringing that kind of style back, I mean, I think for all of the faults of Sonic Frontiers, I think what it needed to fix a lot of those things was just some more of those actual fun levels. Like whenever you would jump into those like obstacle course levels, it made me feel like that 3D Sonic vibe again that I really enjoyed.
Which is so funny too, because those are mostly repurposed, reskinned old 3D Sonic levels.
Right, yeah. Right. So you're like you're getting the classic stuff here. And I mean, again, this stuff I think looks pretty visually interesting, to be honest.
It does. The one thing that worries me about this is like
it's Sonic.
And the thing that like in replaying Sonic Adventure 2 recently, the one thing about that game that I think really is its saving grace is that like the momentum of Sonic feels really good. And I know that sounds like it's like a small thing, like a nitpick, but it's not when the whole game is about like speed and like how agile you are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, I feel like a lot of these games, especially like the boost games that are all about like, oh, just hold down the right trigger and then you're just going to boost. Like their momentum feels kind of off. And the big problem too is then like, when you are using your homing attack and like jumping at enemies and stuff like that's when the momentum also feels bad there, which it did in Sonic Frontiers, at least in my opinion. But it looks good.
I would say even like in Sonic Adventure 2, you played it more recently. Like in that game, like there's some really good Sonic and Shadow levels. And then there are some really not good.
Real bad ones.
And I think there are fewer good than there are bad, to be honest. Or memorable.
Yeah, I mean, like, I took a look at them. Which, by the way, if you're interested in a video about Sonic Adventure 2, the video going up on thegamer.com. Oh, by the time you're hearing this.
Oh.
It's going up tomorrow. A few weeks back.
How many bars of City Escape did you sing in it?
It's the background music for a lot of the video. I have a whole bit about that level and how like it is so fucking good. And the best part about it is that it's how that game starts.
Oh my God.
You're going to start with one of the best levels of all time. Sure.
I mean, yeah, it was one of the few levels that I like would play over and over and over and over and over again in a game. And this is like when I'm cognizant about games and not just like a stupid, like toddler who can't do anything else. Like I would like go back and enjoy that level because I'd be like, oh, this is so much fun. This is what Sonic should be. And then you play the rest of the game. And I'm like, I don't know if this is what Sonic should be.
It's like that Metal Harbor level. It's pretty good as Sonic. Both of the jungle levels as Sonic and Shadow are good. Shadow's the highway level is really good.
Mm-hmm. That's where you get the space fun, levels are the fun.
Okay.
The yellow chow, I think it is. That's where you get that little one to get your cool little burn chow.
Really?
Yeah, there's a special one in that one.
So I tried to like spend some time in the chow garden, and then I was like, I actually just don't have time for this.
I think you had
it's
time
a shame
for it.
Because I like doing it.
I don't know.
I just didn't make time. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I think you somehow edited your thought, and you're like, you know what? Actually, I don't like the chows.
No, I like the chows. But yeah, I'm interested in this, which is surprising because like, I just assumed like, you know, the concept is good of just like, oh yeah, I do a Shadow Generations. But like when it comes to things in practice with I feel like the recent Sonic team, it just hasn't really come together. But I don't know. If I can, I might try this. Do you have any interest?
No, I mean, I've learned one thing about games. I don't think I'm a big platformer fan, like a platform thing.
That's
like
good.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yes.
Yeah. I think I should like. I think I might get some joy out of this, but I do not think it will be worth my purchase, specifically with like looking at what's coming out the rest of this year. And if it's an old game, if it's 2025, I'm not playing this game because this game's old.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. It's like partially a remaster, partially not.
It does look a little old.
Those Sonic levels can certainly, you can sort of see that stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Sonic X Shadow Generations. Next in the Metacritic roundup, let's talk about on the other side of the fence, Super Mario Party Jamboree.
Yahoo!
This is the latest in Mario Party games, launching exclusively on the Switch. It is an 82. Reviews kind of seem to be all over the place. I mean, Eurogamer gave this thing a 4 out of 10. But then, you know, you've got some IGN give it a 9 out of 10. Where do you fall with Mario Party these days, Justin?
I think I kind of appreciate the fact that there are so many different kinds of reviews out there because I think Mario Party is one of those things that has been so samey for so long. And this seems like a mix up to the formula enough that it is causing people to have divisive opinions about it one way or another. Because when is the last time you heard that there was a divisive opinion about a Mario Party game?
I mean, when the last one came out, people were like, oh, this is just like old stuff.
Right. But like people
never.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, like people like either like those games or don't like those games, or it's just like, oh, it's more of the same or whatever. But like this one seems to be doing just enough different to make it something that people want to talk about. And it's doing that Metacritic thing, the reverse. I mean, 82, but an 8.9 by the users, showing that it's kind of hitting at spots that people want, which I don't know. This is one of those games I would never have gone out and bought at launch, but now that it's out and it seems to be a good one, I am probably more likely to pick it up for a party or something like that rather than not pick it up.
This is the kind of game that if Elena ever asked to play, I'd be like, yeah, I'll buy this. You know what I mean? Because she loves mini games and like that's just all Mario Party is. I also thought this is interesting that in this game you can, this is just from the IGN review saying, it's also the most flexible Mario Party has ever been with tons of ways to customize your game, including its brilliant new optional pro rules that reduce luck-based elements to a minimum and crank up the strategy for those who want it. So like you can get rid of the bullshit of just like random character wins at the end, despite the fact they didn't do anything, you know, which I think is a good addition to the series.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that like that's clutch. And like you have the control over that stuff should you want it or not, which is kind of nice.
Yes.
So
yeah, because at a certain point there is like that like that's part of Mario Party.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
Toad coming from behind and winning, even though he didn't do anything. Like that's part of the fun of the game. But
even knowing those beforehand, like it's almost like, cool, I know that I have to win all the mini games in this to get that star. If you just know it beforehand, like.
It's true.
That's all that's I need. True. I just need some transparency instead of the randomness. And it's always fucking Toad.
It is always Toad. I do. Who do you pick when you play?
Depends. I've sometimes been giving Luigi some love because I feel like he's the butt of too many jokes. When I was a kid, it definitely was Toad. And then it kind of shifted to Wario. But then people started fighting over Wario. So then I went to the Koopa.
If I can be a Koopa, I'm always going to be the Koopa.
Yeah.
Or if I can be like a shy guy, make me a shy guy. But for the most part, I go either Toad or Yoshi.
It's it's funny because I was kind of, when it comes to picking a Mario character in one of these games, Mario Kart 64 ruined me. Because some characters are statistically better than others in terms of what you need for them to do.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be competitive, you've got to be the heavyweight characters because they are the fastest and you just got to get better so you can keep that speed up. But the character I always chose when I was a kid was Toad, who is statistically not the best character to do. So, like, I would always, like, lose, like, against people who were really good, or I couldn't, like, beat the time attacks with him because it was just something that, like, he couldn't do well enough. So I was upset by that. So it kind of has always made me double... like think twice about the characters I chose, which is something I love about Mario Kart 8 is that it's really the cars. Like you have the base stats for the characters, but it's the cars that you can use to kind of adjust your stats on top of everything else to make it kind of more, fair's the wrong word, but the you can choose the characters you want and plan around that.
Well, I think that's the way to go. Is don't make the characters the thing that are the thing that determines how the game plays. Make it the other elements, just so that way you can just choose what sort of character you want to be with. You know,
you've passed the test
of
not being EA.
What do they do?
Or just monetize the shit out of everything pay to win,
or just make them all cost $10. I will say the one exception to that, though, is with like the stats stuff, not the EA stuff. Any of the sports games, I think it makes sense to have those characters be different stats. Like Mario Baseball and stuff like that. But
yeah, well, I mean, even like a sports game taking out the Mario stuff, like I don't want like the Bears to be the same as all the other things. I want the Bears to have the players' stats, which kind of makes sense. But that's part of the fun of those games. Whereas like if you're playing fucking Mario Kart, like. If I want to be Waluigi, let me be Waluigi.
Let me be Waluigi. 100%. Last game in the Metacritic roundup is Fear the Spotlight. This is an indie horror game akin to Silent Hill. It's kind of a retro style survival horror game. It is scored a 76 on the PC, an 81 on the PS5, and an 80 on the Nintendo Switch, unscored on the Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and PS4. But this thing is everywhere, basically. Now, Justin, I have played a little bit of this. I saw it at Summer Game Fest, and I got to go did a hands-off preview with my buddy Christian. That preview video is up on the Gamer YouTube channel. Do you know anything about this game?
This is the Blumhouse game, correct?
It is.
Yeah. So I know a little about it, and that's pretty much all it is, but refresh my brain as someone who's never played it.
So this is, as you said, this is the first game to be published by Blumhouse Games, which was what are you laughing at?
Oh, I'm laughing that I pulled up your video and then your name popped up on the screen.
That's me.
Yeah, that is you.
This is the first game to be published by Blumhouse, which is, they're a film studio or film production studio. They fund all sorts of horror movies. Like they did, the Five Nights at Freddy's movies, that Megan movie. What's the big one from the Paranormal Activity was them. Get Out was them.
Get Out.
Basically any horror movie that's mainstream horror movie that's come out over the past several years, that's going to be Blumhouse. But now they're taking that model and using it for games, and they funded this game Fear the Spotlight, which basically follows these two girls who sneak into their high school library to perform What's the thing? Oh, to use a Ouija board to like do a seance to talk with like someone who had died. And when they do that, all of these things go wrong and it sort of gets all weird and ghostly around. It looks interesting. I enjoyed what I saw of it at SGF. It is very much that Silent Hill style horror game where you are trying to solve puzzles based on, you know, environmental stuff or finding, you know, this sort of key that needs to help unlock this sort of lock. You know what I mean? It looks kind of neat. The reviews for it, I don't know if it's going to be my kind of game, unfortunately. I was pretty high on it after watching Christian play it and talking with him. But the review that went up on Digital Trends, it kind of highlighted some things for me that gave me pause a little bit. Now, I really resonate with this reviewer, Gio Colantonio, which, by the way, he did an incredible write-up about the Nintendo Alarmo. Did you see this at all?
No.
He went hands-on with it for a week and wrote about his experience with it. It got me choked up.
Oh.
It got me choked up about it. It's incredible. Where it starts out as this funny story about him and his girlfriend, like, experimenting, like, with this thing. You know what I mean? About just, like, hey, this is a device that... In order to turn the alarm off, we both have to get out of bed and do jumping jacks or whatever the fuck. Or like the first sound that they had that was like he just like sucked in random sounds for whichever, you know, game. The first sound that the Alarmo decided to. This is the Nintendo alarm clock, by the way, guys. The first sound that played was like the Wii Fit sound. So it was like yelling at them to start like working out. So they're like, what's going on? So it starts by it's very silly and funny, and then it ends with he takes it with him to go visit his parents, and he uses it in his childhood bedroom, and he sort of like looks around and he's like, that's like this would have been a huge thing for me as a kid, but now I've outgrown this sort of thing, and like it feels at home in my childhood bedroom, but it doesn't really feel at home with me now. Surprisingly emotional, but it was a really, really great write-up about like, first of all, what is this thing? Why, is it good for adults or not? And then also like, oh, there's like a bit of heart to this about like what growing up looks like when you love this sort of stuff.
So overall, would he recommend it?
Not to adults, no.
Okay, cool.
And I mean, he's just like to kids, but
let me tell you, as a public school teacher, my kids are not getting $150 alarm clock. They're gonna get a phone.
No,
that's it.
Yeah, but Gio, his opinions and mine tend to really overlap in terms of the stuff we like in games. And his review of Fear the Spotlight, he gave it a 6 out of 10, and ends it by saying, he basically saying like. The game sort of lets itself down because it's feels a little like juvenile, which makes sense because it's about kids. But he's like, there's a part that's like basically just like an anti-bullying PSA. And it's like kind of heavy handed and not great. But he says, when the sparse credits pass at the end, reminding me that all of this was mostly the work of just two devoted developers, I'm greeted with a note from the studio. The duo is the first to admit that their game is by no means perfect. It's a plucky passion project made possible both by Blumhouse and Babysitters in equal part. It's a moment of vulnerable sincerity that makes it easier to embrace all the limitations and rough edges. Isn't that the right attitude for a story about two teenagers finding themselves amid the nightmares of an unassuming coming-of-age backdrop? There's a charming awkwardness to Fear the Spotlight as it wades through its nostalgic inspirations and indie imperfections to find its own voice in the horror gaming landscape. It might not fully get there by the end, but I leave the creepy adventure optimistic that, like Vivian and Amy, Cozy Game Pals has come out the other side with a tighter grip on its identity.
I mean, that's the...
Which is... Yeah, go ahead.
That's the perfect sum up to be like, yeah, yo, this game is like, there's good stuff to it. It's just not like my cup of tea, like the thing that I need to play. It's like, it's why you need to read a review for a 6 out of 10 rather than assume a 6 out of 10 is a bad score.
Exactly. It's the sort of thing where like, you remember Chia from, was that last year or the year before?
Yeah. By the way,
that game is imperfect. Yes.
Did you notice my
incredible restraint?
There? Thank
incredible
you. Incredible
restraint.
Thank
I saw you try it and then you backed off.
I did.
That game is by no means perfect, but part of what made it charming for me was I was like, the people who worked on this clearly fucking love this place, you know? And so sort of similar thing here, but, do you have any interest in this? Yeah.
No, but I think the thing that I think this is such a, like a great opportunity or option for game developers is to like pair with Blumhouse stuff, because indie movies, like indie horror movies or these smaller budget horror movies, I think are always those ones that are hit or miss, but no matter if you're going to see that horror movie, like to expect a great time or not, you're going to enjoy it. You're going to know what you expect. You're going to get a horror experience, even if it's not great or amazing.
Yes.
And I think horror video games are the same exact thing, to play around with the medium and play around with minimum, I don't want to say minimum quality, but like minimum budgets in order to make something that is unique and cool and plays around with something in a cool different way. Because what is the actual gameplay for this?
It's like a third person, like retro throwback to, so it's like Silent Hill where you're just like running around. There's no combat in it. When the monsters show up, you have to like hide from, they have like these big spotlights as their heads. So you gotta like avoid getting caught by them. So it's a lot of like sort of stealthing around.
So in of itself, it's just like simple little things that they do, little like tricks and like horror things that they're using and playing with the medium and stuff like that, which I think is kind of cool. So, hey,
yeah,
you talked to me about a Ouija board and I will be sufficiently creeped out any day of the week. So
dude, we talked about this last week with, Faith, the Unholy Trinity, which I meant to go back to today, ran out of time because I had to play it during the day. I can't play it alone. Tonight.
Why did you not go back to the game?
Dude,
earlier?
That's what it sounds like. It's so fucking scary, dude. yeah, dude. So yeah, that is Fear the Spotlight. Justin, you haven't been playing any video games, but I have actually played a ton of games this week.
Hell yeah.
Which is funny because it didn't feel like I did, but turns out I did. Played a little bit more Metaphor. That game is still good. It's still cooking. Went and got, do you know Kung Fu Tea, I think it's called. It's like a boba shop.
Is it a real shop?
Yeah. They have like some Metaphor specific promotional teas. I went and got one. It was pretty good. Probably won't drive 25 minutes there again to get it, but I did it.
You probably also passed like three or four boba places on the way there.
I passed my go-to boba place, yeah. Which is 5 minutes away from me, and I was like, nah, probably not. that trek
good,
again.
But not that good, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll write that off on my taxes, because I mentioned it right here.
you tax
not
this
a joke.
Show?
any expense for the show? Of course I do.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah, it's doing it the right way.
Yeah. I played a little bit more Silent Hill 2 as well, which we're going to talk a little bit more about Bloober Team today. So maybe I'll save some more of that for that. I got through the apartments, got through that first encounter with Pyramid Head and all that. It's good. It's good. We talked about this last week a little bit, like it's good, but it's the things I really like about it are the things I really liked about Silent Hill 2. Not exactly like how this has like upgraded it. That said, I will say the cutscenes I think are spectacular. And the voice acting, while I'm a big defender of, hey, the voice acting in that original game is like really weird because it's like all disjointed and like awkward, and I think it adds to the whole like weird surreal feeling of that game, like feels like a nightmare. That said, if you have really great performances and really great like direction for the cutscenes, like that doesn't make it worse, you know,
right,
like
right.
It's pretty good. So the guy who plays James is really great in it. So, played a bunch of that. I think I'll leave it there we'll talk more about that game as I keep playing it. I got to play a fair amount of the Outlast Trials this week. Do you know the Outlast Trials, Justin?
Is that new?
So it was in early access last December, okay. And then it came out, it's like 1.0 launch was in March, I am going to Canada next week to a convention for work, and I'm hosting a panel where I'm going to be talking to the developers behind the Outlast Trials about co-op horror and stuff like that. And so in preparation for that, they sent me some codes for it. So me and our friend Josh have been playing it. Do you know anything about this game?
No, looking at this, I know very little, it looks like. Is it...
Do you know Outlast?
Yeah. The like spooky, kind of like also weird, gross horror first person game.
Yes. So I played the first Outlast when it came out when I was in high school, and it was not for me. I played it with a friend, where it was the sort of thing where he played it and I sort of watched, and we just like chatted, you know, while he was playing it. It reminds me of like Amnesia, in that thing of like, okay, there are monsters, but there's no combat, so it is just run away from the monsters and hide. And Outlast's whole thing, as you sort of said, is like, it's really gross. Like, there's a lot of like body mutilation stuff, a lot of just like blood everywhere, and like it's a lot of really graphic nudity, which is just, you know, unsettling. And so I completely skipped Outlast 2, no thanks for me. And I was going to completely skip this because it just didn't seem like my thing. But played it for this sort of event coming up, and turns out the Outlast Trials is a lot of fucking fun.
Yeah,
it's really good. Now there is part of it, it's like, it's a good game, but also when it comes to any multiplayer game, the question is like, is the game good, or do I just like my friends? You know what I mean? Because there's like a lot I don't like about it. So basically, it is just a multiplayer version of Outlast, where you get dropped in an area and you have to go complete a handful of objectives, or you're getting chased around by like murderers and stuff like that. And you are like hiding and using items and stuff like that to like either heal each other or you know, stun the enemies and stuff like that. Just like complete objectives, things like that. It's the big thing with Outlast is like the night vision goggles. In the first two games, you have like a night vision like camera, like, so you're like recording everything. In this one, you just have these night vision goggles that have like batteries and stuff like that.
Fuck battery mechanics, man.
I don't mind it actually in this, because there's enough batteries to get you through. There's also usually enough light to get you through, but what it does do is it just puts this additional tiny little like ticking clock on the whole thing, to the point where like you are it's just something that you're managing and thinking about, and you go, fuck, where's another battery? And then you find it and you go, okay, cool, we're good for now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's not something that's like so perilous and so terrible, but it is something that like you are cognizant of and thinking about. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it's like you just gotta play the inverted Song of Time.
Precisely. Slow it down. Yeah, you're good.
Then you're fine.
It's fun. It, like I said, I think part of it is that like it's good company, you know, and it's a fun game to play with your friends. But the setup is good, of just like run around, hide from some dudes, you know, flip some switches, do some objectives. It's fun.
How replayable is it?
So that's the whole thing with it. It is kind of trying to be a live service game, where there are like daily challenges and stuff like that. There is a handful of different modes. There's like a story mode, kind of, where it's like the intended path to play through the game. Then there is an endless mode, where it's like, I think it's like just like survive and complete objectives for as long as you can, that progressively gets harder, you know. We haven't tried that one yet. And then there is like a challenge mode, which we also have not dipped into. We've done like two sessions of it so far. We've gotten, I think, most of the way through the main original story missions on there. So it is not particularly long in that department, but I mean, it is replayable in the sense that like the objectives might be a little bit different. The way you solve them are a little randomized. Like for example, in maybe one of like the first or second levels, you are looking for keys that have been, again, this goes back to just like the gross out element of the game, keys that have been planted inside dead bodies that have paint on them. And so you need to find the clue for what key you need. And then you need to look at the body to see what clue it correlates with. So like, for example, you are looking for a key that's associated with a star symbol. So you look on the body for if there it has like a star painted on it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like if you replayed that, it might be on in the body that has the smiley face on it or the moon on it. You know what I mean?
I saw
it's a good. Yeah. Good.
I saw a cut scene where they injected like something in their eyes.
And, yeah, that's how a game starts.
And that's how I was seeing before my surgery. So now you know.
Oh, well. I'm glad that you are healed of your malady. but it is fun. I'm having a good time with it. It's not something that I would have ever thought I would have wanted to play just because I just don't fuck with like the gross out stuff. But also at a certain point for me, like it bothered me right when I started playing for the first time. Like there's the tutorial that you do is like 100 times scarier and worse than anything that's in the actual game. Mostly just because you're alone for it. I mean, you're getting used to how the game works and feels. But for me, like when you spend a lot of time like watching that kind of content or like engaging with that kind of content, it just becomes background noise for me.
Yeah.
You know, like if you drench a whole room in blood, it's kind of like you didn't put any blood in there because there's so much blood that it just doesn't like, it's not real or scary anymore. You know, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. As someone who's been to 9 haunted houses in my life, some of the haunted houses like are trying too much with all that stuff, trying to make it spooky, like the environment, when really the stuff that scares yes. you is when you have to like go through a giant inflatable butt balloon. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No. So did that happen to you?
So they're basically like this like thing that you have to go through, and it's like these air-filled sacks that push together, and it basically feels like you're going through someone's like rectum as you're trying to get through it, because it's like
these. And that's on purpose?
Yeah. And then I get grossed out because you don't know where you're going, but then I'm thinking of all the other people whose faces are just going to rub up against there. It's not the visual of being in a rectum. It's just the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
To be honest, that's kind of the vibe of the Outlast Trials.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's not scary necessarily. Like, again, the tutorial is kind of spooky because you're alone. But, like, it's hard to be spooked out when I'm, like, hanging with my buddies. You know what I mean? And then also, it's sort of like, it's not scary once it's just, like, it's trying really hard to be scary. But what's scary is not a crazy murderer going like, I'm going to cut your face
off. Yeah,
like it's kind of comical. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like the hand has been played. I know what you're going to do. You know, like there's nothing to be afraid of. I know what that will be. But I'm enjoying my time with it. And it definitely is another game to throw into the pile of Halloween horror games that I've played this year that I actually think is actually a pretty good Halloween game.
Is it co-op or a couch co-op? Or does it have to be online?
I don't know. I think it is online only. Okay.
I just checked the Metacritic score. It scored a 75 on PS5, a 74 on Xbox, and a 69 nice on PC. Nice.
That's about where I'd put it. It's a good time, but like if I went to play it alone, like I don't think I'd have like a ton of fun with it.
Yeah.
Or if I was like trying to like just matchmake with random people, like I just don't think I would have that good of a time.
I mean, is there like teamwork that has to happen?
Kind of. There's a lot of like you start an objective and you are going to have to like search an entire area for some items. So it's going to just be a lot easier if you split up. Or it will ask you to get two different things. So there's one where you're in a courthouse and you have to find evidence that you need to destroy and acid that you need to pour on the evidence to destroy it. So we split up and we were like, okay, I'm going to find the evidence, you find the acid, and then we'll meet back up here. And what that also does is it means that there's not in Outlast, there's usually just like one enemy that's like chasing you, at least in the first one. Whereas this one, it introduces like several enemies that are sort of like wandering around chasing you. So if you don't split up, like your chances of just getting discovered are just high.
Yeah.
You know, like at a certain point, like you're going to run away and you're going to get separated anyway. So there's a lot of just like, okay, we should split up. You take care of left side. I'll take care of the right side, you know? Or it'll be like, okay, you push the thing, because there's like a lot of like pushing objectives. You push the thing down the track. I'm gonna get the enemy kind of off your tail, and you can do the objective, and I'm gonna run.
I mean, quite honestly, that sounds like the formula mix-up it needed for the game to be, I don't want to say playable, but to like make it something that, you know, it's worth a try instead of just a third Outlast game.
Yeah, they did, I think, what they wanted to do with that first one. That first one was like a smash hit. And then I think a lot of people sort of commented on, hey, that second one feels pretty, it's starting to feel stale already. And so, yeah, I think you are right about like, which is actually what this panel is about how this game had to go multiplayer in order to sort of like execute on the vision.
Yeah.
It's cool. So I'm going to stick with it. We're going to play at least a little bit more. Cause you know, it's a free game. We're having fun with it. So keep doing that. But, last game, sorry, again, I know I said I played a lot of games. I don't have a ton to say about this one though, is a game called Line. Line is a really, really simple puzzle game. Do you know the Frog Detective games?
Yeah.
So this is a game made by the Frog Detective people that is completely not Frog Detective at all. That's, you want to get me to respond to your email? Say you're offering me a code for a game developed by Frog Detective devs.
And you're like, I'm in.
And I was like, yeah, what's up? It's a really, really simple puzzle game. It's like, have you ever played those games or seen the ads like on your phone for like, you have like a square grid and there's like two red dots and you have to connect them without, in a way that doesn't like connect with the blue dots.
So this is like that free game that they show you that you, when you go to download the game, it's not actually the game, but this is the actual game that you wanted to play when you went to download
exactly.
That app. Oh, hell
exactly.
Yeah, man.
Exactly. And it's good. Yeah. And the puzzles are good. They're very simple line puzzles, but there's a lot of like, it's just like lateral thinking puzzles. Not much to say about it other than it is quite good. I do like it quite a bit. It's very similar. Just like a lot of line puzzles.
Is this going to prepare you for season 2 of Squid Game? Because this probably is going to be like one of the challenges on that.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you watch the Squid Game reality show?
No. Wasn't it just like they were redoing all the tasks?
Yeah, but there was like a real... They did it for real.
And they,
you know what I'm saying?
Killed a human being on live TV.
Shot him right in the chest with a rifle. You got him.
Damn.
I was thinking that maybe I should watch that. It seemed interesting.
The reality TV show or the Squid Game? Or someone
TV
getting
show.
Shot in the chest?
The last one. What would you say? What was the last one you said?
Someone gets shot in the chest.
Yeah, that one. Or no, the one before that?
The TV show? Like the...
Yeah. I'm potentially interested. But I didn't think I just like game shows because I've just been on that Survivor kick. No, but Line, it's great. It's on iOS. It's on Android, like all over the place. It's like $2. I'm playing that on Switch. I don't know how much longer I'm going to play it for because it's just like a lot of line puzzles. And when you've done a bunch of hard line puzzles,
you've done
them all. But
you've been there.
It's fun. I do like it. So yeah, there you go. You want to talk about the news?
Yeah, let's do it.
Where to begin, Justin? I'll tell you where we're going to begin. At the Xbox Partner Preview for October.
Howdy, partner.
There were a handful of things here that were announced. A lot of, just in my opinion, stuff I don't have any interest in or don't know what it is, which is, I guess, to say that I could have interest in it. But the one big thing for me, the big headline, is FBC Firebreak, which is the 3-player co-op first-person shooter game set in the oldest house. The Federal Bureau of Control from Remedy. I think they announced this like a year ago, just saying like, hey, we're working on this like multiplayer control shooter. And then we just haven't heard from it since. And then now we've got a trailer. It's coming out next year. And the big sort of announcement with this is that it is coming to both Game Pass and PS Plus day one. So kind of no matter where you play online games, like you are probably going to have access to this. Did you watch this trailer? What'd you think?
I mean, it's hard for me to tell you, like, does this look like a game I want to play? I mean, yeah. Obviously, like, I think it's cool because I love this world. I think it's going to be interesting to be in at the very least. But in terms of, like, a co-op kind of shooter, I don't know if I need this, even if it's in a world I'm interested in.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty lucky to have a consistent group of friends who I play games with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, just looking at this, I'm like, oh, yeah, we're going to play this. I'm interested because I like Control and I like Remedy, you know, and like all that stuff. If this were not Control, I don't think I would really care. When I say that, I mean, like, looking at like the actual like shooting and like the game of it, like it just looks like a horde shooter, you know.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's set in the oldest house, I'm into that. And then it's like, I imagine there's going to be some sort of story stuff about like maybe they're cleaning it up after all of the stuff that happened in Control. You know what I mean? But I do like the idea that they are using some of the objects of power as weapons.
Yeah.
In this. Like you shoot the little like garden gnome guy out of like a Home Depot bucket, like a paint bucket. Like that's funny. But
it goes back to like really like picking at the odd tone of those games. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you're basically coming out like a group of weird Ghostbusters, like looks like you like yeah. strap shit that you found on the ground on in order to fight these things. And then you are like, again, Control has like this like weird, casual, unsettling vibe about it. And then you just bring in like these like Power Rangers who are in there trying to like destroy things with their homemade guns. I don't know. It feels like it fits in a weird way, but also it doesn't fit in a weird way. It's just, you know what I mean? Like it's checks out.
I always described Control as like the Department of Mysteries from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like the oldest house is like that. And these guys are like, you remember in Monsters, Inc., the people who come in to like clean up like human artifacts. You know what I mean? They're all like shaped weird. They wear like the yellow suits and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like if you had those guys go and clean up the Department of Mysteries, which like that's a good pitch. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, sure. Yeah. So this was the highlight for me, but that's just because you know me, I'm all in on the Control, the Alan Wake-iverse, which that DLC launches tomorrow. So maybe I'm about to get back on my Alan Wake bullshit.
You got this.
And you get to play as, what's her name? Agent, I am tempted to say Estevez, but I don't think it is. Alan Wake 2 characters. Oh, it is.
Hell yeah. Look at that.
Kieran Estevez, also played by the woman who plays the main character in Star Wars Battlefront 2.
I am interested to hear what you think about that, because I'm always a little skeptical when it comes to playing these games because I'm so out of the headspace of it. Like even you saying Agent Estevez, I was like, who that, you know what I mean? Like trying to remember who that is and everything like that. I think this is kind of a smart thing. Doesn't it happen before the events of Alan Wake 2? It might happen like before or after, kind of like setting things up a little bit. So it's not like you have to have just played it in order for you to get it. But I don't know. There's always still a little bit of just skepticism I have when it comes to playing any sort of DLC, even if it's for a game that I really, truly enjoyed, like Alan Wake 2.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. It is also a complicated game. You know what I mean? In terms of like what it's all about and what's going on with that. But I might replay all of Alan Wake 2.
Hey,
like,
man.
Okay. It's been 1 year since that game came out. So they did a big update for it with like a bunch of accessibility stuff. They gave like that PS5 Pro version now. So like, maybe I'll pick that up now. But like there were some like improvements to it made. And I was like, okay. So I have it on Xbox. But I was like, I bet I can get it discounted on PlayStation and I'll get the platinum. Is that wasteful?
It is.
It depends on the price, right?
Peter, just look.
Yeah.
It's one of your favorite games.
It is true.
Would it give you joy to get a platinum in that game?
You know what? If I bought a physical copy of it, which they did.
Yeah.
So maybe.
And like, I'm just saying that because, like, again, this is not like something about like, do I want two of it? You were going to do something different with it. Because did you get 100% achievement the other one?
Yeah.
So now you can actually like do it again while playing it again, getting use of your time and getting that elusive plat for the year.
And doing the DLC. It's just the question of like, do I have the time for that? With Metaphor, with all the puzzles I'm doing with Line, with what's the other game plan?
Line is you really put Line next up to Metaphor. Nothing wrong with Line, but like I just say there's some
yeah. No, you're right. I might. It you know what it really depends on? It depends on am I gonna buy Astrobot? Am I gonna buy Dragon Age? I don't think so. I'm probably okay if I mix that one, right?
Dragon Age or Astrobot?
Dragon Age.
Depends. I mean, I think my stance on it is it going to review well?
Yeah, I imagine it will.
Is hanging around a high 80 to, dare I say, a high 90, I'll get it. If it's a 98, I'll probably get it day one.
If it's a 98, yeah, man, probably. Yeah. Although Astrobot was 94, wasn't it?
And that game's a piece of shit. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, it really depends. I here's the thing. I don't want to miss, like, I waited on Baldur's Gate 3 for no reason. You know, I was just, I don't know. I don't know if I'm really feeling the fantasy vibe right now. And then I regretted it because I would have played way more of it.
I would say, though, it's not that you missed it, like, because you were being cautious about it, like, I think the reason was it was a game you were interested in to play. It was a unique style and you just waited on it. That was no reason. Like you should have done that. But Dragon Age, is that the kind of like gameplay that you're looking for right now?
I don't think so. Cause it's like Mass Effect meets like fantasy, right?
A little bit. Yeah. Like a little bit more. Yeah. Like it looks to be a little bit more fast action, than the other one. But like, I mean, is that what you're looking for?
I don't know. I mean, like not while I'm also doing Metaphor.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also playing Line, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because like, that's really taken up like half your time. You're playing Metaphor and Line at the same time.
So I've got Metaphor going auto conversations, so like I don't have to push any buttons to listen to them do the visual novel stuff, and then I'm playing Line on my Switch in my lap while I watch it.
Is that true?
No.
Okay, because I was like, oh, God.
I will say I put Metaphor down for about 4 or 5 days because I got to a boss that just kept wiping the floor with me. It was the boss that you saw. So I watched Sam Woods from ex-DualShockers play it when we played the demo at SGF. And then it's the same boss that you were talking about that was in like the previews where it's like a big tentacle,
yeah,
like octopus guy that comes out of the water.
That took literally that, like the whole bonus show.
Yeah. I played it and it wiped the floor with me like 4 times in a row. And I was like, fuck this. And then I was like, I'll come back to this when I'm ready. And then I waited and waited and waited. And then last night I was like, okay, I'll do it. So I did it. And I played like 3 more hours.
What did you do to get ready? Did you level up your bonds, eat some food, walk around?
Couldn't. Oh. I was, you're sort of trapped in that moment of just like, what you got is what you got.
Could you just let the time run out and then like whatever, or is that kind of like literally just a skill check?
You can't, there's no timer on that one. I knew that it was weak to lightning, so I just specced everyone out with lightning attacks.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There you go.
It's easy.
Yeah. Easy. He says.
Well, I mean like it was, it was a whole thing, but I did it. Also from the Xbox showcase, they showed more off of that Pirate Yakuza game. Do you have any interest in this?
No.
I know we talked about it a little bit when it was announced.
No, I mean, I think it looks cool. Like, it kind of, like, completely fits the vibe of what I would expect, and it's just completely, like, crazy, insane stuff. I would say this is going to be better than Skull and Bones.
Yeah, but is that... Is that the metric we're using?
Yeah. Yeah. Is it better than Skull and Bones? We've changed our metric.
Yeah. Is Skull and Bones better than Medium? Probably not, right? Doesn't seem like it.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
I would say probably not. What have you played this year that was not better than the Medium?
Astrobot.
Let me look at my list. Astrobot, really?
I I enjoyed more about the medium than Astrobot. That does not mean it's a better game.
That is quite the statement, though.
But
Let me look.
Mean it down to my bones.
The medium is probably better than Arranger, which was a puzzle game I didn't really like that much. The medium is better than X Defiant. The medium is better. I liked more than Little Kitty Big City. Sorry, everyone. I liked medium more than content. Children of the Sun. I would say the medium and Dragon's Dogma 2 are about on the same level for me. I probably like Dragon's Dogma 2 a little bit.
I was gonna be like, oh.
But when I think about Dragon's Dogma 2, I was like, I don't even remember. Like, I must have played 20 hours of that game, and I don't remember a fucking second of it.
I would assume that gameplay was unique enough to make it better than the medium.
Here's what I do remember. I jumped on a big, like a griffin, and I was stabbing at it in a boss arena, and then the griffin flew 100 miles away with me on it. I was like, oh, I see. Oh, so that's interesting. I didn't realize that was a very fun moment. And you get a trophy as well when that happens.
Did you survive?
No, it chucked me the fuck off.
Okay.
And threw me about 1,000 feet down on the ground. Yeah.
And to be fair, that's more memorable than anything that happened to Marianne.
Her name is Marianne, yeah.
In the medium, so.
It's true. It's very true. I remember walking around some very sad looking hallways in that game.
Yeah. But, well, it's because they were, you know, filled with the, was it like a child predator? Wasn't one of the bad guys that you're fighting against?
Dude, one of them was like a child. It was horrific.
And the other one is like your sister or something.
Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is this guy have to do with anything? They're just looking at the camera like, isn't that fucked up? I'm like, I guess. Animal Well is coming to Xbox. That's cool. Congratulations. Go play Animal Well. I like that game quite a bit. Although I know you didn't really like it, did you?
It's not that I didn't like it. It's like I knew what it wanted was asking of me at a certain point, and I didn't feel like accomplishing it.
It was on PS Plus, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did I like it? I didn't love it, but like I just didn't want to put the time in I needed to have that fucking wolf chase me around so I could get the little disc in the thing on the other side of the fucking map.
That is tough. That's a tough moment.
Yeah.
Another game here, Mouse PI for Hire, looked kind of fun. Do you know what I'm talking about? This is like a... Yeah, go ahead.
That was one I've been following for a while. It's like a first-person shooter, almost like Cuphead-style art with it. It's like a mixture of like 2D black and white with like 3D black and white models that kind of like seamlessly look like it's this like cel-shaded kind of environment. I think it has looked pretty interesting to me from the beginning. We got a release window, which is nice. I thought it would come out this year. I didn't know if that was what it was announced as, but it was one of the games I'd been kind of like waiting to replace Hades 2 with on my Fantasy Critic. It looks
neat. Yeah. I'm down for this. I will see how reviews go, but kind of it's like a boomer shooter, like Doom style, but it's got like that. Yeah. That Mickey Mouse, like old school Mickey Mouse, Cuphead style.
Yeah.
But with like machine guns.
And like, even if it is just like a Doom style game, I think the art style in itself makes it interesting enough for me to want to try. But as you said, it does depend on the price and the reviews of it. But I don't know. It looks pretty fun to me.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. The only other thing here is, and we can sort of transition to this other story, is Chronos the New Dawn, which is a sci-fi survival horror. It looks like third-person shooter from Bloober Team.
Wait, they're the ones
of the medium.
Oh!
And Silent Hill 2 remake.
No, that's okay.
Well, so Bloober Team was kind of making headlines after this game was announced. I'm just going to read you this headline from GameSpot by Mark Delaney, titled Bloober Team says it's done making, quote, shitty games, quote, and that Silent Hill 2 remake wasn't a fluke. Basically, in this interview, the studio goes on to explain that they have learned a lot from the previous games it made, and that after it made the medium, the studio needed to evolve this is how the story sort of ends here. It says, we want to be a horror company. We want to find our niche, and we think we found our niche, so now we just have to evolve with it. And how that happens is more complex, but it also happens organically. Like with 2016's Layer of Fear, people in the studio were like, okay, we made some shitty games before, but we can evolve. We gathered a team that loves horror, so I think for us, it would not be easy to switch to other genres, and we don't want to. It's interesting too. This opens by saying, like, Bloober Team has read the nasty tweets and it's seen the videos in which skeptics brace for disappointment. It hasn't ignored the pessimism. And basically saying, like, they wanted to meet the challenge. And I really admire that in a studio. That's not an easy thing to do, right? Like, to say everyone's kind of hoping that this is going to be bad. But as our good friend Alex Perez said, the funniest thing that could happen with Silent Hill 2 Remake is if it's actually just really good.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think this is cool. I think Bloober Team kind of has its niche of being like a horror studio. You get those, like, you know, you get a horror game from them every once in a while. Are they always good? No, but you kind of know what to expect with them to a little bit. A lot of sizzle, not a lot of zazzle. You know what I mean? Like, the atmosphere, I think, usually carries them more than everything else in the game. The moments, the good moments are strong, while everything else is just kind of getting through. So I do wonder if the process of Silent Hill 2 and working on that, and like actually being forced to work around like good source material, and then they start putting their own, you know, pizzazz on top of it, that was a good experience for them to grow as a company, because they're like, oh, this is what people want in a game. Because, I mean, regardless of Silent Hill, the original versus Silent Hill 2 being better here, the thing that I think most people walk away after Silent Hill 2 is not that Bloober Team versus the original Konami, right? It's they walk away with it being like, oh, that's a kind of cool concept, a cool psychological story that they're going with.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, if you are spending so much time working so closely with a game as good as, you know, the original Silent Hill 2, you start to go like, oh, this is what works. Oh, this is how they did that. And, like, I think Bloober hasn't, they're not far off. They just haven't been able to stick the landing for me, you know, to the point where, like, I haven't liked those games, but it doesn't mean that, like... It's not bad. Sorry, Silent Hill 2 is not bad. Their other stuff doesn't stick the landing. I don't really like it that much. But like, they were close, and I think they've gotten much closer, obviously, with the Silent Hill 2 remake. Now this is the real test, though, of can this, what's this called again? Chronos: The New Dawn. Can it be able to make good on the sort of expectations people now have from Silent Hill 2, now that this is a new IP as opposed to working with something that already has a really strong framework? That's the question, right? Like, we will see. But I don't know. I am at the very least interested to see what the studio does now. And I'm going to be curious to see where it goes. And I'm hoping the best for them.
Yeah, I mean, I want a good video game. That's all I ask for. Give me a good video game.
Of course.
I don't care who makes agreed. It. Well, I care who makes it. Like, I don't want to play a video game made by a dead person, because, like, if they made it when they're dead, like, what would that be?
Oh, I see. I was like, Justin, people die sometimes, and the games they make are still around.
What?
I understand what you're saying, though. Oh, fuck, I forgot we even told Justin about death. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
This is just a joke.
Okay, like, I thought you were going to joke and, like, say, like, Santa wasn't real.
Have I ever told you about how I'm just going to call him my nephew now. I think Elena and I are there. He's 5 or 6, maybe. But he didn't know. He was like, he stepped on like a big fly and it just like stopped moving because he stepped on it. And he like didn't understand what happened. And I was having that realization, I'm like, you don't know what death is. You don't understand this as a concept. I'm not going to explain this to you today. So, Theo, we're going over there.
He brings a little fly with him everywhere he goes. It'll come up soon. He didn't
understand. I was like, no, Theo, we're gonna move on. So Silent Hill 2 remake, though, it's good. It's good. But do I just like Silent Hill 2? I don't know.
The fact that you're having that question tells me that it's good. You know what I mean? Like,
it's worth playing. Right. For sure. Right. It's worth playing.
And like, I think that's kind of cool that there's at least another version of that game that you are having that question about to begin with.
I would say this, a wonderful way to experience this game. You know what I mean? So like for you, someone who's never going to go and play the original, I bet this is a great way to experience. I'm
playing it right now. The whole time we're,
oh my gosh.
You see that? This is my new controller. It's my new invisible Xbox controller.
And you're playing, the Xbox One, so you're playing the HD re-release.
Yeah.
Which is the way you can, that's the only way you can play it, unless you have the original game or emulating, whatever. But it is good to the point where I am going to be interested to see what they do next, right? And if they can actually learn the lessons or if it was all just sort of like imitation, which is fine because the imitation is good. But I'll say it still has like a level of like... Remember when they did that combat trailer and the combat looked really lame?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It looks like that. It feels like that. Like it doesn't, it's not like, it feels a little lame,
is it,
which is,
it know, better than the original?
Combat
like, wise, obviously that would be the whole point we're talking about here.
I guess it depends on what you mean by that. Because like the combat in the original one is really simple. It's really, really simple. But it is one of those things where you don't want to get into combat because you're probably just going to get like roughed up. So it's best to avoid enemies if you possibly can.
Yeah.
The shooting is different because it's like the difference between point and click shooting, like tank control shooting, like old school Resident Evil shooting and third person action shooting, you know, with the reticle and all that. Whereas it's just like, as long as you are pointing kind of at the enemy, like you're going to hit him. So that's different. It's like more skill based, right? As opposed to just like generally, are you facing?
Yeah,
the
are you in
the
right direction? Yeah.
Yeah. I'll say the one thing that I don't love about it, and I don't know how you get around this. Well, I do. And it's called what they did with the medium, but they didn't do a good job there, is the third person camera kind of is inefficient and ineffective in a lot of the small tight spaces that you're in. So like when you walk into an apartment, you kind of like wrestle with the camera a little bit to like be able to see where you're going. Whereas in the original Silent Hill 2, the camera was just placed where it was going to be, you know, so that you can best see the things in the room. I understand that the fixed camera angles don't necessarily work that well with modern audiences. I mean, and I think it takes a well-practiced studio to be able to do it right. Like we saw it like with the medium where like that didn't really work that well. But yeah, just growing pains of translating a game like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, how do you fix that at a certain point? Like when they're not doing a full revamp of the design from what it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just in Spider-Man 2, finally, it's been around for a year, and it is coming to PC January of this coming year. Sony's been doing a lot of their PC endeavors with their newer games. It's been sort of interesting to see how long it's taken for a lot of their back catalog to get on there, but I think it's mostly all up, and so now it's just like whatever's coming out, like they're throwing up there like in a year after it launches, or sometimes it's a day and date. What do you think
about it coming to PC?
You gonna play it?
Yeah, played twice on PC. No, I mean, this is what this looks like to me. Specifically, a game like Spider-Man. I think Spider-Man is a little bit more of an obvious one. But whenever they're looking at the down part of their schedule, their releases, it's kind of like, all right, we're gonna get another little boost here. It's probably a very calculated process about what they're doing in their whole like marketing thing because, I mean, game developers don't need to have specifically a game released. They just need to have money and income. I mean, look at fucking Naughty Dog. How many fucking re-releases have they released recently without having another game come out? So I think this makes total sense. Not my place, but like with a property like Spider-Man, I think the fact that it could be on PC is going to be great for it.
The original's got to be on PC at this point, right?
I thought so, yeah.
It has to be. Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is,
yeah.
It
the remastered is on PC. You can purchase it for $60.
So the other part of this here is Insomniac, after their big sort of data breach, was that last year or was that the beginning of this year?
Oh, boy. I don't actually know the answer to that question.
I feel like it should be
I thought
in
it was
this article
this
here.
Year, but
December 2023. So it was right after the launch of Spider-Man 2. But after that sort of data leak, we had seen sort of the next, I mean, what was it, like 10 years of Insomniac projects
or
something
like
that? Like it was like a fuck ton of stuff.
Huge. Including like people were able to like play part of the Wolverine game, right?
Was that what that one was? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like source code in like animations and stuff like that. Yeah, it was pretty devastating for them. But one of the things that came out of it was a look at the timeline for the release, like the post-release content for Spider-Man 2. So there was like the original game, then there were going to be three different pieces of story DLC, one titled Beetle Infestation, one titled Extreme Carnage, and then one titled Spider-Verse Anomaly, which those were supposed to apparently be rolling out over the course of this year, which we obviously did not get. But now it seems Insomniac has confirmed that they're not doing any additional DLC for Spider-Man 2, which has a lot of people kind of like upset. I'm not so upset about it, but I want to hear what you think of all that first.
Well, so like, I think it's like one of those things that's kind of interesting too, because when we think about these leaks all the time, people expect that what has been leaked is going to be released exactly like they said, without understanding that nothing works like that, specifically
like
in the video game industry.
Works. Yeah.
Yes. Insomniac is amazing at getting their stuff in, like the amount of games they release and their work schedule there, like God bless them for doing that. But the fact of the matter is, I wonder if I think that based on the leak and based on them deciding to not have any more story content planned for Spider-Man 2, I don't think that's necessarily a knock on Spider-Man 2. I think that's just thinking about how successful something like Miles Morales was. Why wouldn't you put that content into the Venom or Carnage game or whatever I'm sure they're going to come out with, right? Like, it makes more sense to make that a beefier package, charge $40 for it rather than having the DLC, which, I don't know about you, my friend, I am not in a DLC. I think I've said it twice before on this podcast. I said it two times before we started recording. I don't need DLC. I don't need it.
I think it sounds cool. Like, just the idea of like, oh man, a whole DLC about Carnage or Spider-Verse. Oh, that sounds cool. I'm with you there. Just like, just save it for the next game. Or if you change and say like, oh, actually we're doing a whole spin-off game about this. Great. You know, while we wait for the next big one, like, perfect. No problem for me. I think that like the problem with that big leak is exactly what you said sort of towards the beginning of what you were talking about, where it's like people saw that and assumed that that is exactly how all the things for Insomniac are going to go from here on out, like for the next 10 years. When that's just not the realities of game development. That's just not the realities of any production pipeline, right? Like, I mean, at any point in your life, has anything ever gone 100% to plan? No, of course not. But like, there is a reason for it. Maybe it wasn't coming together right. Maybe they just looked at it and said, you know what? Let's just like, what if we scrapped this and put it towards this thing? Or maybe it just wasn't working. They said, it's just not going to happen. You know, you can't really blame them for that. I'm sure someone's going to mod Carnage in to Spider-Man anyway, Spider-Man 2 on PC anyway. So,
and it's going to be Woody Harrelson though, but it'll be like his different characters. White Man Can't Jump.
Did you see that movie? Not White Man Can't Jump.
No,
Venom 2.
No. After the first one, I'm like, I don't need to see this series.
It was like maybe 89 minutes. It was like, you're in and you're out, to the point where me and my friend Kevin went and saw it. And as soon as it was over, we got up and we were like, yo, it is 7:30 right now.
We're good.
Expecting this to be sort of a bigger excursion,
yeah,
you know what I mean,
yeah,
than it was.
Now we gotta talk to each other. Jeez.
And geez, look each other in the eyes. No, thank you.
Wait, that's not how you watch movies.
That was Kevin talking, by the way. I would love to look him in the eyes, but he won't look me in the eyes.
I get it.
I don't know. Like I didn't ever play any of the DLC for the first game, which apparently means I missed some story beat when that reporter lady shows up and she's got like a mask on, like a chain whip. You know what I'm talking about?
In the second one, right?
Yeah, when she shows up like that, and I was like, oh, what the fuck? Like, last I heard, you were a well-respected NYPD detective.
And like, now look happened? At you. Now look at you. Yeah, yeah.
Now you're, like, killing guys, being like, it's for the greater good. And, like, listen, you're an ex-cop, so I get it. But, hey, ooh, some commentary. Spider-Man 2, great game. I'm ready for whatever comes next.
I gotta be honest, I think about that game less and less the further I get away from it. Like, it's not like I remember it back on it being like, ooh, this game is amazing.
Do you remember the first one that way, though? I don't. I like them. I like them a lot. But, like, I don't look at them and be like, wow, that was a really effective... Like I was really affected by that story.
I do, because while I would say they made the traversal better in the new game... I think ultimately the fact that the traversal was the first time I was doing traversal.
That's true.
It made it stand out positively. But yeah, the wingsuit makes it better, but that didn't make it as, it didn't push the bar enough to make me be like, oh, I remember just swinging through New York, because it was right after my first time playing Spider-Man 1. We went to New York afterwards, and then I immediately re-downloaded the game on like my PlayStation remotely
on the
flight home. So I got home and I'm just sitting there swinging around the stuff. And like, while it was cool, like doing it initially, it was even cooler realizing that those are like real places.
Yeah.
And like to see the architecture and stuff, like, yeah, it's shortened obviously, but like, it just was a cool experience for me. And I don't have a moment like that with Spider-Man 2. In fact, I was so incentivized to beat Spider-Man 2 so quick that I didn't necessarily like hang around with it as long as I think I could have.
That is the thing with that game, though, too. It was relatively short in comparison to a lot of the other big Sony blockbuster games. But because it's so fun, I just wanted to like inject it in my veins.
Yeah.
Like, I want to play as much of this as possible. And then once you're done, you know, this is the case with a lot of single player games, and this is fine, but it's just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Unless I want to play it again. But yeah, I did like this game. I liked it more than the first one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a better game. I think the story was cooler. I think the fact the two characters were interesting, even though there were some wasted opportunities, I still feel like what they were doing was complex and cool.
I totally agree. And I'm curious to see where they go next, because I know they were talking about like the next one is, I think, like the end of a trilogy or something like that, which I'm a fan of the trilogy. Give me three acts, you know.
Is this the one? Is this the one when him and Batman hang out?
No, this is the one where he fights. I was going to say Thanos, but he does that. So he does. You think they bring Morbius into this?
Hope fucking not. Like, let it die. Separate the two things. Don't even make us think about that movie.
It was an uninteresting movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't even like particularly funny to watch.
Like, I had to clarify that.
Yeah.
That
like, Madam Web. It was a fucking time to watch.
But that's what I'm saying. Like the fact that Morbius was supposed to be funny to watch, not like funny. Like, I think that's says everything you need.
Yeah, it does. It does. Are you cool with no DLC content though for Spider-Man? Would you have played DLC content for Spider-Man? Like, what could have gotten you to play DLC content?
I think the only thing that would have made me play the DLC content is if it came out and it involved like a mainline character that had something actually important with the overall plot. Like, if the DLC was a Carnage one, right? Like, wouldn't that get you to play it more so than it being like, oh, it's a DLC about random. Think, what's a random
Sable, Silver Sable, dude?
Oh yeah, Silver Sable, like the original one, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like whenever there's a DLC coming out, it's got to be something that like extends the game for me to want to play it in a way that is not just like a pickup from the end or something like that. There's got to be a purpose for it for me to want to play it. I mean, I can't honestly think of the last DLC I actually paid for that was like traditional DLC. You're pointing. Do you remember something?
Shadow of the Erdtree.
Okay, but that's what I mean though, right? Like, yeah, it's technically DLC, but like that is like
kind of a whole other
that's
thing.
A game, that's an experience thing too. And I was trying to think, like, I bought one of the Splatoon 2 expansions or something like that, but because that was like a whole new game that went with it. It wasn't just like extending on what we already had. And like, yeah, Erdtree.
Yeah.
I would say that's technically a DLC, but like, I mean, you call something a 40-hour experience. I don't know if that's quite a DLC in which your powers don't quite carry over to the new game.
This is going to sound like semantics, but it's like the difference between an expansion and DLC.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'll say I was interested in the Persona 3 DLC for the Aegis stuff, but it came out, and I'm just like, I have moved on. I've got other stuff I'm working on.
I can imagine like a game like that is probably the worst. Because like losing all those RPG mechanics and losing like what you can do, like
and then coming back, you're like
the fuck is happening here? Those are the moments where you miss the 20-hour tutorial in a long JRPG. Like you're like, wait, they slowly teach you those skills, which in the moment might be a little slow, but long run, it's helped you out.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. I think that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. I want to give you a reminder to join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod. Like J. Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham, our lovely deluxe podcast producers, which every single week get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. Again, we're talking about the rest of the games for the rest of the year and sort of just looking at what that looks like for us and how we might be budgeting our time for gaming. You can also follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything?
You just forgot to give yourself a pat on the back for just being awesome at this.
Oh, well, thanks, Justin. I appreciate it. All right, that's going to do it for us. We will catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye. I'll stop recording.